Hello, everyone, and hello, Cheryl. I am recording. So it's good to be here with you all for the Guiding Light. This is the time, of course, that we're looking at the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. I will not be here next week because I'll be on family vacation, but I'm going to send Cheryl a couple of audios to play that are very, very interesting. They're about Robert Adams and his direct experience when he was 18 years old, his direct experience when he went to the ashram and lived with Ramana Maharshi. So please come next week, even though I won't be here, and listen to that audio. And Cheryl, I'll send that to you before I leave town. I'm going to play a Frank Sinatra song to get us started. This song is "Fly Me to the Moon," and when I hear this song, it's it's my heart singing to God, except for one line. There's one line in the song that's something like, "So please be true," and that line I sing to myself, right? Be true to my heart's calling. Be true to my true desire. Be true to my purpose. So all of the song I sing to God except for one line, which I sing back to myself. So this is "Fly Me to the Moon" with Frank Sinatra.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore.
Fun little song. So last week I was reading on page 4 and the top of page 5, question number 8, what is the nature of mind? And I just feel like I want to cover the last little bit of that again before we move forward, if that's all right. So it was a fairly long answer. We talked about it all hour last week. But the last two sentences in the answer are this. The mind always exists only in dependence on something gross. It cannot stay alone. It is the mind that is called the subtle body or the soul, the jiva. And so what I just wanted to reemphasize again before we go forward is that the mind, which was primarily defined last week as thought, the world, and then in this last sentence, the soul. Mind makes up thought, the world, and soul. And it says the mind always exists only in dependence of something gross. And we looked up the definitions of the word gross, and the one that seemed to fit the best was large and not detailed. Something very large and not detailed. And that, of course, would be the self, or what we truly are. So what that means is that the mind is completely dependent on us, on our attention, on our interest in order to thrive. And again, that would mean thought is completely dependent on our interest. The world is completely dependent on our interest. And what is being called here the soul is completely dependent on our interest. And I felt like at the end of last week we kind of rushed through this idea of the soul. So I wanted to come back and look at this just a little bit longer before we move on to question number 9. So the soul is called also the subtle body, and it is called the jiva. So, you know, I'm just pausing right now because I'm looking at, you know, what words do I want to try and use in order to be clear. The soul is the sense of an independent me. Not just an independent me, you know, Regina, in this body. You know, if we go to the story of reincarnation, and some people have had some, regression experiences where they've experienced past lives. And so let's pretend like, you know, like right now I seem to be Regina, but there was a possible previous life where I was someone named Dorothy. I'm making this up, by the way. And a possible previous life where I was someone named Jim. And a possible previous life where I was someone named Binglon. And a possible previous life where I was someone named Dulce. You know, right? All these possible previous lives. And if I went into regression and I remembered all of these possible previous lives, I would call each of them I, me. I was Dulce. I was Jim. I was Binglon. I was Dorothy. Is that the name I used? Dorothy. I already forgot the first one. And if Hal's here, I'll use Hal. If Hal said, wait a minute, I thought I was Dulce. You know, I might feel, no, you weren't Dulce. I was Dulce. You know, like let's say Dulce was somebody famous. You know, like maybe the Apostle Peter. No, I was Peter. Hal's like, I was Peter. Right? So why would I argue with Hal about whether he was Peter in a previous life or whether I was Peter in a previous life? That independent me, not you. That's what here is being called the subtle body, the soul, or the jiva. Me, not you. So it's beyond this. It's beyond this apparent lifetime. It's beyond this apparent identification with this personality and this mind and these memories. But it is not beyond the idea of an independent, separate me. That's the soul, at least the way the soul is being defined here. And so that is a part of the mind. It is not truth. And so the mind was defined last week again as thought, the world, and I'm going to call it, and the individual soul. And all of that appears to exist only in dependence of the truth having interest in it, with us being the truth. The problem is, of course, that we are confused. We think we are the individual soul. So what I'm going to do now is go on to number 9. And this is on page 5. What is the path of inquiry for understanding the nature of the mind? That which rises as I in this body is the mind. If one inquires as to where in the body the thought I rises first, one would discover that it rises in the heart. That is the place of the mind's origin. Even if one thinks constantly, I, one will be led to that place. Of all the thoughts that arise in the mind, the thought I is first. It is only after the rise of this that the other thoughts arise. It is after the appearance of the first personal pronoun that the second and third personal pronouns appear. Without the first personal pronoun, there will not be the second and the third. So that which rises as I in this body is the mind. And we just spoke about that, the sense of individual soul, right? I was these other personalities in reincarnation, right? I mean, so that I that goes beyond this personality and this mind and this set of memories, that I is actually the mind. If one inquires as to where in the body the thought I rises first, one would discover that it rises in the heart. That is the place of the mind's origin. Even if one thinks constantly, I, one will be led to that place. So right now I'm kind of being reminded of salmon. you know, I've seen a few documentaries on salmon in my lifetime. And what I've learned from those documentaries is that salmon return to the place of their birth in order to mate, right? And so what this sounds like to me is that the idea of me, the idea of I, was born out of what is being called the heart. And that it returns to its source, it returns to its heart, to the heart, and merges with it. And when it merges with it, the sense of an individual self disappears. And what's interesting in this answer is it says, even if one thinks constantly, I, one will be led to that place. To that place where the sense of individual self disappears. It merges into the source. Now, what I would like to do is go ahead and just take a break and do a bit of a meditation. So I am shifting over to my Tibetan bells. And of course, we want to begin by getting comfortable. We're going to practice the I meditation. The I meditation is actually a form of self-inquiry. When you practice the I meditation, you're not thinking about the I. You're not thinking about the self. You're not thinking about how long is this meditation going to go on? I've got other things to do. Oh boy, it's hot in here. Or whatever else the mind wants to think about. What you do each time the word I is said is you look backwards for its source. And that's why I say it's a form of self-inquiry. You just keep looking backwards, watching from whence the I came. What is its source? You're playing the game of salmon. So I will say the I. Let me get a drink of water. Some of you may find that the sound of saying the I for yourself is also going to be helpful. So, if you want to say the I also, please do. But since we can't hear all of you, I will say it for the group. So let's just close our eyes. And let's just take a moment to transition from an outward focus to a meditative inward focus. Like we often do, we can use the sound of the Tibetan bells to help us make that transition. You also might want to take a few deep breaths. And remember, the purpose of the sound I is to look and find the source of that sense of me within you. Words are funny, but you get what I mean. So let's begin. I. 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 I'm going to stop the meditation now. So, this was the first time that I attempted, I want to call it that form of self-inquiry, just using the word I. And so I'll share with you what my experience was. And it's a form of self-inquiry that I might use again. What I found in my case was that the mind got very quiet very quickly. And my guess as to why the mind got very quiet very quickly is because I was allowing, not in a really controlling way, because the truth is I felt very relaxed and very restful, but out of intention, I was allowing only one thought. And that thought had a purpose behind it. As I said before the meditation started, the purpose of the sound I was to continually to remember to look towards the source. And we only did it for a very short time because I was conscious of the fact that this is a teaching time. But I would have been very interested to sit and do that for like 2 hours. Because what I found was that the first time I said I, immediately I had, I guess, a result. I had a result. The first time that I said I, what I became aware of in a fairly strong sense, was I became aware of the ego personality as an object. I could feel the ego, not anything bad, just the formless solidity of it. I could feel that sense of individual self. And the second time I said I also felt it, but I kind of felt like I moved back within it, deeper within the sense of individual self. And then with each progressive I, and again, each I, it's not just the sound. The sound was merely a reminder to look, to keep looking for the source, right? To keep looking for the source. So with each additional I felt like I went, I'm going to call it, back deeper within the ego sense until I got to what I'm going to call the edge. The edge of the ego sense. And then I started to feel like I was going behind it. And that's really all I can say about it, except that, as I said, it would have been interesting to do it for 2 hours. Now, had I been doing it alone, at some point, although I would have continued with the I as the prompter, and the I really helped to keep the mind quiet as well, I certainly would not have been attempting to vocalize it. I would have just been doing it in the mind. Because as you may have heard, it got very difficult. The deeper I went within, the harder it was to say the I out loud. And in fact, I think it was probably the last time I said I, it actually took great, great effort to have a sound come out. It was took great effort. So certainly if I had been doing this by myself and practicing the meditation, I wouldn't have been trying to say it out loud after a certain point. I think there's probably an advantage to this meditation, in that, again, you're using very, very little words to coach you. You know, there are all kinds of meditations. You know, like one meditation that is really popular is the, you know, be still and know that I am. And people may repeat that mantra, you know, kind of as a grounding mantra as they meditate. But unless you continually reduce that mantra, that's an awful lot of words. I don't know if you've ever tried to go deep into meditation with a long mantra like that, but it gets very difficult. Because every time you say the mantra, it's like as you're going deeper into meditation, you're forgetting the mantra. And so you have to activate the mind to remember the words. And so you keep reactivating the mind. At the same time, it can be very, very helpful to have some kind of a grounding thought, because I'm sure everyone has experienced going into meditation and attempting to quiet the mind, but then the mind starts thinking, and the next thing you notice, you forgot you were meditating, and you're sitting there thinking, right? And so having a grounding mantra of some type is very, very helpful at keeping you focused on the fact that you are meditating, keeping you focused on your purpose. In this case, keeping us focused on the fact that we want to continue shifting our attention back towards the source, right? And so I is a single sound mantra. Right? A single sound mantra that is just enough to remind you of your purpose, but not so much that the mind has to be engaged in remembering what the heck was my grounding sentence. So I don't see it as a magic formula, by the way. Sometimes people misunderstand things like this as magic formulas. You know, whether we're talking about using the I form of self-inquiry, or whether we're even talking about using the question, who am I? It seems like I read somewhere, or maybe I heard it on Awakening Together Radio, some teacher, like Robert Adams or someone close to Ramana Maharshi. It seems like I read somewhere or heard somewhere just in the last few weeks that there are, or at least there were in Ramana's time, people who misused the inquiry, the self-inquiry, who am I, as if it was a magic formula. In other words, they would just set and repeat, who am I, who am I, who am I. But it wasn't backed up by the looking. And that was a misunderstanding of the question, who am I? It would also be a misunderstanding of this I. If I just sit here and say, I, right? That's not it. The real purpose of self-inquiry is the looking back, the looking for the source. And in that way, what happens is a continual deepening. And so again, the I is merely the sound that keeps you reminded of the purpose. Now the question number 9 was, what is the path of inquiry for understanding the nature of the mind? And Ramana's answer was, that which rises as I in this body is the mind. If one inquires as to where in the body the thought I rises first, one would discover that it rises in the heart. That is the place of the mind's origin. And that, by the way, is just a symbol. It doesn't really rise in the body. Even if one thinks constantly, I, one will be led to that place. Of all the thoughts that arise in the mind, the I thought is first. It is only after the rise of this that the other thoughts arise. So again, as I mentioned, when I was practicing I'm going to call it the I mantra right now, although it's a form of self-inquiry, not just a mantra, because again, it prompted the looking. But as I practiced the I mantra, what I found in my experience was very quickly, the mind got fairly quiet. And when the mind is fairly quiet, you're in a place of I think people probably call it void. I don't know what other word to put on it. But you're in a place where the mind is not thinking about anything else or anyone else. It's not thinking about a me. It's not thinking about a you. It's not thinking about a world. It's just being quiet. So what Ramana is saying is, you know, again, if we focus our attention inward, we get to the point where the ego sense of self, the idea of me, the thinking about me, it merges into the heart and there's quiet. But then when the meditation ends, assuming awakening hasn't occurred, when the meditation ends and the thought comes back, I'm ending the meditation now, right? When the thought I comes back out, then the entire world arises too. Now there's the thoughts of, oh, here's I, and there's you, and there's, you know, he and she and that, right? But what comes first is the I. Without the thought of I, none of those other appendages would exist. Now, to me, that's actually a very sweet, very beautiful thought. Because even though the ego is the sense of separation, the sense of a me separate from you, the truth is, if there's quiet, which I'll call the heart because Ramana's calling it the heart. So if there's the heart, and then out of the thought, out of the heart comes the thought I, and then out of the thought I comes everything else. If you really look at that, really contemplate that, you can see that it's all connected. It has a relationship. To me, the only mistake that occurs when this whole outward going motion occurs, the mistake that occurs is that we think we have left the heart. Or maybe we forget the heart completely. You don't even think we were ever there, right? And that's where the real sense of separation exists, is if the heart is forgotten in the outward motion. But if the outward motion occurs and the heart is remembered, it's an entirely different experience, probably the experience that the Course calls true perception. And I feel that meditation, some form of self-inquiry meditation, helps to anchor the remembrance of the heart as the source. And therefore helps to anchor the remembrance of the truth, but also of what everything is, of the apparent relationship. It's really more than a relationship because it's the same essence, right? But once you open your eyes and there seem to be many, many things, to see it all as related through this essence is a very clean way of seeing it, a very easy way of seeing it. So I think that the less that we go into the silence, the more likely we are to forget the relationship of everything with everything. The relationship being that it comes from one source. And the more we meditate, the more we go in and we have that experience of going in and being quiet. And then we also have that experience of coming back out, but being very, watching the coming back out carefully, not just jumping out, but watching the coming back out and noticing how the I has to arise. And then there could be some awareness of other as well. And watch that blossoming happening, or that blooming happen like a flower happens. And notice the relationship. Notice the fundamental necessity of I in order for there to be an other. the fundamental necessity of I in order to be anything. So watch how you move from quiet to I to world, and see it as a blossoming of the source rather than as something that's gone wrong. A flower growing out of the heart rather than losing connection. Even if one thinks constantly, I, one will be led to that place. Of all the thoughts that arise in the mind, the I thought is the first. It is only after the rise of this that other thoughts arise. It is after the appearance of the first personal pronoun that the second and third personal pronouns appear. Without the first personal pronoun, there will not be the second and the third. So let's go on to question number 10. How will the mind become quiet? By the inquiry, who am I? The thought, who am I, will destroy all other thoughts. And, like the stick used for stirring the burning pyre, it will itself in the end get destroyed. Then there will arise self-realization. Now, I have always used who am I. I might shift to I, because to me, again, it's not the words. It's not who am I, or it's not I. It's the grounding of a single thought that keeps the intention in place, the remembrance of what I'm doing now. You know, the mind wants to stray away from remembering that I'm meditating. The mind wants to stray away from remembering that I'm going in and more in, deeper, looking for the source, right? The mind wants to forget that. And so the grounding thought, whether it's who am I or whether it's I, that's a repeated reminder of what I'm doing. It keeps me focused. It keeps the attention continually going inwards. I have always used who am I. When I am meditating by myself and I close my eyes, the question that I ask is, who am I? Or sometimes I might say, what am I? And then after a period of time, I ask it again, who am I? Actually, I think I say, what am I? It feels more natural. So I think I say, what am I? What am I? Right? And I let that question take me in and just keep taking me in. But I actually liked the I, because the I, for me, had the who am I built into it, but it was fewer words. It had the same potency and less distraction. So I may use that instead. But notice, at least try that for a while and see how it works. I suspect it's going to work very well based on that brief, I don't know how long we were meditating, 10 or 15 minutes, but based on that brief experience, I suspect it will work very well. It seems like when I might use who am I is if a big distraction does come in, then maybe a bigger response, three words, is a helpful way to tune myself back in, right? But again, whether we're talking about using the words who am I or whether we're talking about just using the I, notice the question is, how will the mind become quiet? And the answer is by the inquiry, who am I? The thought, who am I? Or I would also say the thought, I, right? That thought will destroy all other thoughts. And I think this is why I had the experience of the mind becoming quiet so quickly. That thought will destroy all other thoughts. And like the stick used for stirring the burning pyre, and you know, I've never been to an Indian funeral. Of course, I've seen some of this on, also on documentaries, just like the salmon. And, you know, they have a fire, of course, that burns the body. And so the stick that burns that fire, right, and keeps the fire burning until the body is completely burnt up, that stick that you use to keep the fire going, that stick is like this who am I thought or what am I thought or I thought. It keeps the burning going. It keeps us continually looking within instead of getting distracted. The meditation fire doesn't burn out. We keep going in. I, or what am I? See, now that sounds too long for me now. I think I'll stick with the I. Right? But it keeps us focused on what we're doing. It keeps the meditation fire burning. But then in the end, that thought itself, right? It says, who am I will destroy all other thoughts. And like the stick used for stirring the burning pyre, it itself in the end will get destroyed. So in the end, that last thought, whether it's who am I, what am I, or I, that last thought itself gets lost. And to some degree, that was already being experienced by me because, you know, the sound, I was having so much trouble trying to lead and make the sound. It was getting quieter and quieter and quieter, right? And when this is carried to its conclusion, so that we have practiced this enough that fire has completely burnt up the ego sense, like an Indian funeral fire completely burns up the body. When it completely burns up the ego sense, and then the tool that we use, the who am I or what am I or I, gets thrown in, and it also burns, then, Ramana says, then there will arise self-realization. So, whichever one feels most natural for us, who am I, what am I, or I. Again, they're not magic words. They're just reminders to keep that meditation fire burning so that we keep, like salmon, going towards the source until the ego sense is completely burnt up. So I think that concludes today. Let me go back and just find another little song for us to play to use up this last couple of minutes. Here's a song with a title that seems to fit with what we just talked about, burning up the ego sense. The name of the song is Until Only I Am, and I won't be able to play the entire song, but we'll listen to a few minutes of it. It's a song from a Muji satsang.
You give them. pour away priceless, it is ocean. Before desire moves, it is emptiness.
Give everything to everything.
Take what I'm not until only you give nothingness to nothingness. Take me away.
That I will end the song. But you can find that if you want to hear it on YouTube by searching for Until Only I Am Muji. All right. Thank you. Releasing the mic.